Today we're going to be talking about Holmes's chapter on the body in the book Essential Ernest Holmes. I'm sorry, I'm abbreviating it. But this is a wonderful book, and we've been working our way through it this year. And I tell you, there's a lot of material in here that I hadn't read before, and a lot of it is a lot of fun to read. And I've gotten some new insights in a lot of different areas as I've been going through the book, preparing for talks or reading up before somebody else gives a talk. And so today we're going to talk about the healing process. I'm going to go into some theory, and then we'll talk a little bit about the role of the science of mind treatment or prayer. And then we'll do some practical application, which is always my favorite thing to do, is now you learned it, let's do it. And of course, you know, whenever you prepare for a talk, I find that I attract circumstances to myself that give me a new appreciation for the topic. So for the past month, I've had a horrific cough. So I've been using a lot of the tools, the practical application that we'll be talking about later on. And at the same time, my own mother, a few weeks ago, had five of her vertebrae compress. And so, you know, I've been dealing with treating for her and her well-being, and I'll talk about that a little bit and what I've been doing in terms of my own mother and her spinal injury. When we talk about the practice of spiritual mind healing, we normally start with some basic assumptions. First of all, God is perfect. God is all there is, including man. We are part of God. And we are divine beings ourselves. We are whole and complete and as perfect as God is, because we are part of God. Now, when we contemplate, when we're like imagining or having some kind of contemplative moment, we consciously make contact with our inner being. And within that, there's a divine pattern of perfection which springs forth, and we're renewed from that contact. And so when we do this, we're deliberately clearing away any discord from our consciousness, and we are automatically healed. So you can think in terms of discord, clearing our consciousness, and healing. And that's basically the three steps. A lot of people may say, hey, my body's nothing, you know, my soul is everything. But the truth of the matter is, when you look at our religious science teaching symbol, there, you know, the circle represents all that is. The top part is thought or spirit. The middle part is the law. Or the thing that repeats over and over again when we put our thoughts into it. And the bottom part is the effect or matter, and in this case, our physical body. And the circle is all that there is. So naturally, our body is included in all that is. So we can't ignore our bodies. We live with them all our lives. And so it would be a tragic mistake to ignore it and not treat it well. Disease, though, is an impersonal thing. You can think of it as possibly a thought form or a misconception or maybe a conviction in the mind of the person who has it, as well as an actual experience. So, for instance, I don't know about you, but I run into people all the time that say things like, oh, high blood pressure runs in my family. It's just a matter of time before I get it. I have a man that works for me that is only a few months younger than I am, and he's continually saying, well, I don't know how much longer I have on this earth. You know, I have all these physical issues, and I don't know if I'm going to be around that much longer. And I remind him that I'm his boss. I'm a few months older than he is, and he better not talk about being old like that, because, you know, there's a lot more left to live for. So,
I suppose you can order him.
I can order him to stop that. No. I just want to remind him that he doesn't have to dwell on his...
Stop your whining, lad.
I mean, there is a culture out there of people that talk about nothing but their illnesses, particularly...
COVID.
older people, their ailments. I can remember my grandmother and her sisters talking about their ailments, and I mean, it was like the thing to do. It was acceptable. And I guess because I have been around here.
Even competition.
Yes.
I'm worse off than you are.
I got it worse than you do, so feel sorry for me. I guess our job as practitioners of metaphysics is to transcend the appearance of any kind of illness, even if we admit it's a fact. Like I admit I've got a cough. And so far it's held off, but it's pretty... That's a pretty good cough. So I would never be so cold-blooded as to tell somebody you're not sick when, you know, if they're hacking away or if their leg is broken. It would be cold to say you're not in pain if somebody's broken their leg. I mean, that's just not reality. But it doesn't have to be necessary. You can admit, for instance, that you might be unhappy at the moment, but it's not reality that you have to live your life in unhappiness. And disease is the same way. It's a temporary condition, but it's not a truth. And so our job is to try to see and sense that always in back of everything, there is always perfection. So healing is not creating a perfect idea or a perfect body. It's revealing an idea that's already perfect, which is our own selves. We are perfect. It's almost, I think of an analogy in furniture refinishing. When you buy a piece of furniture and it kind of looks nice, but it's been painted over several times, and you start stripping the paint off, and beneath it there's the beautiful wood. Maybe it's something like tiger maple, but it's revealed, and it's shining, and it's beautiful before you. That's the way we are. You strip away some of our thoughts, And we have, you know, our negative thoughts, and we have nothing but beauty behind us. So healing is really a revelation. It's like the furniture refinishing. And it's a revelation in the thought of the practitioner. And here he's talking about somebody doing treatment for another person. The process in healing is the work with our own consciousness as practitioners of religious science, and the time it takes for a practitioner to convince himself of the perfectness of his client, and the length of time it takes for that client to realize his own perfection. So to give you an example, I can remember one time, we often did one-minute miracles right after our meetings here, and we would a practitioner would sit with another person and that wanted prayer, we'd pray with them. So Kate Hannigan came up to me one day and wanted some prayer. She was having a health challenge. And so I just prayed. I held her hands and I prayed. And all I could feel was that life force in her, that magnificent energy. And it was very easy to pray for her well-being. And she looked at me when I was done and she said, "You don't see me as sick, do you?" And that's what prayer does. When you reach that moment in your mind, when you see the other person as complete and whole, no matter what they may look like at the moment, the important thing is to get your mind wrapped around their own well-being, which is the heart of their being. Now, our own level of belief is not probably sufficient at the moment to enable us, at least mine isn't, to mentally set bones. We normally call in a surgeon. And so if we are ill and we feel the need of a physician or some kind of medical help, there is nothing wrong in going and getting a doctor. And I in no way wish to say, you know, it can all be done in treatment. You have to do what you feel led to do. And if you feel you need to go see a doctor, go see a doctor. We can only go as far as our spiritual knowledge at the time will take us. And while principle may be infinite, We can only act on it or use it to the capacity that we have at any given moment. So, analogous to that is scientific discovery. When you think about science 100 years ago and where we are today, 100 years ago, people didn't have computers in their home. They didn't have, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have a lot of the so-called miracle drugs that we have today. We didn't have the technology of fuel cell cars and and that sort of thing. And so a lot of the things that 100 years ago we didn't have, maybe some minds had a vague conception, but as time goes on and more people develop, work with those ideas and thoughts, our ability to use those new scientific breakthroughs grows, and they continue to feed off one another. And so it is with healing. And that the more we see of healing practices, the more we learn about our ability to heal using mental treatment, the more we're able to do that. And I like to think of, you know, my ability to heal as being kind of like the Star Trek model, where I've seen Star Trek for so many years, and I've watched the episodes over and over again. And I really believe that someday we're going to have a transponder. Someday we're going to have tools that scan the body automatically, and they seem to have a chemical-free a doctor there in some of the episodes. And I think that, you know, mentally I'll be able to get there as well. And I've been studying the healing arts for a number of years now, so. My ability to think about what is possible within the realm of healing continues to grow, especially as I meet all of you who are actively pursuing that study in other areas. Another example of healing and thought is people who say, I can't see without my glasses. Well, for me, that's really true. I have a difficult... I can't really make Carla or Connie out over there. I can see, you know, people, but that's about it. And so it'd be ridiculous for me to go out and drive without my glasses on and proclaim I've been healed. But there is a process that we could employ, which is to begin to declare that there's one perfect vision that sees through me, and this is the truth of my being. And if you continue to do this, continue to state this, you will no longer need glasses. Have I done it? No. Am I likely to do it? Maybe not. But, you know, it's possible. And there are people, I do know of people that are actively working on their vision by doing that. Now, a lot of us use affirmations in healing, and sometimes if you try to use affirmations like, I am well at this time, and you're not feeling particularly well, it may not ring true. And I believe that affirmations need to have an element of truth in them to be believable, to be useful. And so you can repeat the affirmation, you can dwell on its meaning, you can meditate on its spiritual significance until your thinking becomes clarified. And I like to think that you could take some gentle steps in approaching your use of affirmations, and you don't have to start all out with, I am totally well at this point in time. If that doesn't feel believable, you can say something like, my body is getting plenty of rest, my body knows what it needs to do to heal, and those may ring more true, and they're not as large a leap in your mind and in your belief system as some of the gentler steps. And so you should continue to repeat these treatments or affirmations so that what it does is it begins to more and more build up in your mind, and as we know, repeated thought becomes a belief, and it becomes so. So, in essence, what's really most important about an effective approach to healing and using the mind is that there's no room for doubt in using it. I went through the Science of Mind textbook on the section of healing, and I think I must not have ever read it before, because I was amazed at the amount of detail that man has in the chapters on physical perfection. He has, he goes through kind of the theoretical basis for using treatment and healing, and then he has, let me just read you a few of the topics that he gives you suggested treatments for. Headache, fatigue, insanity, lung trouble, vision, constipation, poisoning, paralysis, asthma, hay fever, colds, childbirth, obesity, insomnia, deafness, rheumatism, intemperance, and trouble with the skin, limbs, nerves, stomach, and the heart. So if you're interested in digging more into it, I strongly suggest the two chapters, and the Science of Mind textbook that go into this, because that is the basis for a lot of the things that are talked about in this chapter in The Essential Earnest. I want to talk a little bit about my mother and to kind of demonstrate what I was talking about with using affirmations. When she was first seen by the doctor, it was acknowledged that her vertebrae were crushed, and she's in a lot of pain right now. And they said, we don't think we're going to be able to operate for a while because it appears she's got some nerve damage. And so as soon as I heard that, I started work. And a few days later, the doctor came back and said, oh, that's not really true. She doesn't really have any nerve damage. And I thought, well, that's perhaps because I don't know who else, maybe my mother herself, because she does this a lot, is to affirm that there is no nerve damage, that everything is working perfectly. And so indeed, when the doctor looked at her again, there was no nerve damage, so they can operate this week and repair her spine. I guess what they do is they kind of pour concrete in to fill in the vertebrae, and as soon as they do that, she's like perfect. So that's amazing. But I think I've talked enough about the theory. I want to talk a little bit about a practice that you can use. And I also, I want to make sure I'm clear. I think my personal experience has been that it's helpful to have somebody else pray for you. I find that a lot of people that have experiences in healing usually have somebody else that's praying for them. We can pray for ourselves, we can use affirmations, but there's nothing like a little support behind you. So I recommend, if you do feel some kind of challenge coming on, don't hesitate to call another person and ask them to know that your well-being for you. Holmes has a wonderful suggestion for working with your own mind and consciousness on healing. I wanted to put out before you that may work really well for you. Holmes suggests pretending that you have a chemical laboratory inside of you that's out there managing your health, and I'm thinking of Obamacare right now. But be like, there are little people inside of you. They're in there. They're working all the time. They're digesting your food. They're assimilating it. They're circulating your blood, and they're getting rid of impurities. They're always at work. And if you were to do something like break a bone, they'd start working right away on trying to get to work on repairing that break and to get whatever resources in place that you would need to heal. At one time, a popular psychologist went up to Holmes and talked about how he had suffered from a problem with indigestion. And the thought came to him, the psychologist, that he could talk to these little people that were inside of him and tell them it's really their business to take care of his digestion. And so he talked to them for a few moments each day and told them how wonderful they were and how much he appreciated what they were doing and that he wasn't going to interfere at all. And by interfering, he meant any kind of thinking he was doing about illness. So he was going to be happy, and he knew that they would take care of everything for him. So he continued to praise them and to bless them, and shortly his condition cleared up. Big surprise. So we can interfere with our staff inside of us so that they can work to our destructively. They can be directed through our thoughts to produce illness, but by turning our thinking around, as that psychologist did, we can reverse this process and we can produce well-being instead of disease. And so, you know, just think about what that would mean to have a practice of talking to the little people inside of you and thanking them for doing such a good job and taking such good care of you. Think about what that's like. That's like being at work and somebody's telling you, or if you, some one of your clients has told you what a wonderful job you did, you want to work all that much harder for them. So you continue to do that. And, you know, just imagine them as hard at work and connected to divine intelligence, which is directing them at all times. And you produce well-being. So I started out with a theory, and then I kind of went through you know, how we use treatment in healing work. And then what we're going to do, we're going to take a break, even though it's 11:45. I tend to run my talks short. But we're going to work on a little practice with a meditation today that Holmes suggests using a couple times a day. And it's really powerful. I've been using it myself, so... There is one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. My body is a manifestation of the living spirit. It is created and sustained by the one presence and the one power. That power is flowing in and through me now. That power animates every organ, every action, and every function of my physical being. There is perfect circulation, perfect assimilation, and perfect elimination. There is no congestion, no confusion, and no inaction. I am one with the infinite rhythm of life, which flows through me in love, in harmony, and in peace. There is no fear, no doubt, and no uncertainty in my mind. I am letting that life which is perfect flow through me. It is my life now. There is one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is my life now.